Vous écoutez en balado-diffusion le colloque Civic Freedom in an Age of Diversity, James Tully's Public Philosophy, présenté par le groupe de recherche sur les sociétés plurinationales. 19e épisode, conférence de Dimitri Karmis, Dialogue, Listening and Difference.
Intimidated as well, because when I look here, I see. I should say first, I did my PhD at McGill under supervision of Jim, and the reasons I went to McGill are all here: Charles Taylor, James Tully, and Alain Gagnon. So let me talk first. About Jim's teaching, the influence of his teaching on me, and then later I'll talk about talk more about his research. But I'd say Jim's main contribution, main influence was the attention he brought my attention to listening, actually, to the importance of having a quality of attention. And now I might say that in all of my syllabi, and my students may testify, I write that listening is as much important as
speaking. It's true.
So Jim's quality of listening is quite something, and I'd say it's very powerful, actually. Jim's listen, as you know, with a good quality of silence, patiently, very patiently, respectfully, fully present, without finishing the sentences of his interlocutors, including myself, with no English at all at that time. He was even able to understand me. So, as someone who meditates, I would also say that he has a meditative, very calm way of listening. His way of listening is powerful, and I came across a quotation from a recent book by Andrew Dobson, Listening for Democracy, a few days ago, and I read a quote. There is a quotation from Michael Ende's fantasy novel, Momo, and the way the central character, Momo, is described, made me think of Jim, of the way, of the power of his listening. Let me just quote that short passage, talking about a little girl, Momo, with a very powerful quality of listening. She listened in a way that made slow people, myself with no English, have flashes of inspiration. It wasn't that she actually said anything or asked questions that put such ideas into their heads. She simply sat there and listened with the utmost attention and sympathy, and I would add empathy, fixing them with her big dark eyes, and they suddenly became aware of ideas whose existence they had never suspected. Jim is always able to make you do something with your own ideas. He's able to pinpoint what's good in your own ideas. He sees things that you don't see in your own ideas. And in that sense, I think he's an exceptional supervisor. And I'd say that that was the main contribution to my journey with him at McGill. So, and in a way, let me add that that kind of listening changes relations of powers in a way, because it rebalances relations of powers, because that really, by doing it, by listening patiently despite a status, the power in the seminar becomes power with. That's cooperation. That's an enterprise of sharing, rather than power over, as it is still often the case in classrooms and in our universities. So for me, that's very important, and that's something I always try to remind myself when I teach. Okay, that was for teaching. Let's now turn to my presentation, and I will talk about listening and about the research of Jim later. I'll start with a quotation from Gadamer, then a story about my mother, and then I will talk about Jim. So basically, the title of my presentation could have been Gadamer, Jim, and my mother, something like that. Okay. But actually, I'm more conservative. It's dialogue, listening, and difference. Okay, the quotation from George Gadamer. It's from a short and not particularly well-known text from Gadamer, published in the first time in 1971. I think it was first presented in a radio program. It's entitled in French, L'ineptitude au dialogue. So it was translated from German to French, and then I will translate it to English. So the inability to enter into dialogue. In that text, Gadamer argues that the growing monologization of human behavior, and he seems to be talking about atomization, is basically related to non-listening and bad listening, a tendency of having our ears full of our own words. Gadamer writes that being able to enter into dialogue, that is to listen to the other, is the true elevation of human being able to go from inside to outside of yourself. In other words, for Gadamer, there won't be any return to a more dialogical society without more and better listening. Listening is as much important as speaking, and listening, I will return to that. Listening is a practice. Listening is not passive. Listening is an action. Hearing is passive in a way, in the sense that it's physical. We have here, they're open, we hear, but listening is something else. Listening, it's hearing plus a quality of attention. The story is more personal, of course, about my mother, Marie Lemieux Carmis. Well, like most women of her generation, my mother didn't study much. She was, of course, very proud when I got a PhD, still more when I became a prof. And one day she told me that she was especially happy I was able to speak in public. I was able to speak more easily than her. And she told me that she was ashamed not to be able to speak well, not to be even in front of a few people, not to be able to do that. I then told her, of course, well, but you're so great at listening. And it was true. She was amazing, an amazing listener. And then she replied, well, that doesn't count. Listening is, that's nothing. Everyone listens, so. I think I tried to convince her, of course, that listening was as much important and even sometimes more important than speaking, but I'm not sure I succeeded convincing her. But I think that story tells us that in our societies, people are often ashamed not to be good speakers. It's less common that people are ashamed of being bad listeners. Listening is much less valued than speaking. As paradoxical as it may seem, the currency of communication is speaking, as if speaking without a listening audience was much of value. There's no value of speaking without an audience. And this brings me to Jim Tully, who now has a very large audience. Jim, of course, has been a great listener, but he also brought attention to listening in his writing, starting with strange multiplicity. Just in strange multiplicity is an important statement. He says that the duty of audi alteram partem to the dialogue itself. In other words, it's constitutive of dialogue. And in another text later in 2005, he writes, the first and perhaps only universalizable principle of democratic deliberation is audi alteram partem, always listen to the other side, for there is always something to be learned from the other side. So basically, listening as, in a way, a form of recognition and a form of cooperation. So starting with strange multiplicity, Jim has consistently reiterated the importance of this principle and has made the practice of listening a key part of his conception of citizenship. However, he has not been very explicit about what is listening and what is good listening. In my presentation, I want to describe political listening as a practice of recognition and cooperation that is central to what Jim calls civic or cooperative citizenship. Despite the deliberative turn in democratic theory, despite that very rich body of literature on deliberative democracy, there has been only two full-length political science monographs devoted to political listening. One is the recent one by Dobson, and the other one was written in 1996 by Susan Bickford. Both are excellent, but only two. Listening seems to be taken for granted. It's not surprising. In our societies, speaking is much more valued, as I said, than listening. And we usually assume that we know what listening is. Let's assume we don't, okay? According to Gemma Corradi-Fiumara, listening is the other side of language, the neglected side. Nicholas Kampridis would say that's the receptivity side of language, a different kind of agency. The neglect of listening may have very oppressive effects. And I quote Fiumara, in a logocentric perspective, the power of language determines a situation in which the incompetent are relegated to what is considered the desolate limbo of listening. My mother and many women still today know that. According to Bickford, political listening is, with political speech, one of the two basic components of politics as a communicative engagement that takes conflict and difference seriously and yet allows for joint action. More precisely, for Bickford, political listening is a central activity, and I emphasize activity, of citizenship, a form of attention that citizens give or refuse to each other in the course of political debates. Listening is a crucial political activity that enables us to give democratic shape to our being together in the world. We may talk about listening as a metaphor for a variety of related activities, reading, writing, interpretation, and listening, of course, as effective attention in actual communicative interaction between political actors. Effective listening requires being able to hear, of course, while metaphorical listening requires substitutes. In both cases, it requires a certain kind of presence and attention. Bickford emphasized a difficulty that may appear to be proper to the study of listening and that may explain that it is not studied so much. Neither silence nor question posing or arguing can be pointed to as unequivocal worldly signs of listening. There is no unambiguous indication of listening. However, as she interestingly adds, the lack of such an indication need not prevent us from theorizing or communicating about listening, because there is, after all, no such guarantee with respect to speech as well. And here, Bickford is worth quoting at length. She says, Although we can literally know when words have come from a speaker's mouth or signs from her hands and body, we have no definite way to show that speakers mean their words, that they are sincere, that the opinions expressed are really their own. Speakers may be lying, filibustering, or saying something they do not believe out of anger or a desire to derail decision-making. Judgments about and challenges to the activity of listeners happen and can happen despite the absence of infallible concrete measurement. We can move from speaking and listening about the problem to speaking about communicative phenomena themselves, the level of attention, or why we feel unheard. Our experience is not the final or unquestioned criterion here. Rather, in such a discussion, we are offering our experience to the perspective of others, and some may not confirm our sense of what is going on. The terms of such challenges and judgments depend on what we understand ourselves to be listening for, that is, what we are doing or trying to do together. In other words, our interpretation of the activity of listening should be based on both our experience as listener in general and discussion about a given experience of listening in particular. Body language, quality of silence, questions and replies are all potential signs of listening or non-listening that we can interpret. And those signs, that's something I want to look at in my further research in the upcoming years. Let's now turn more specifically to listening as a practice of recognition and cooperation. The first step is that listening is making oneself present, not simply hearing sounds, but paying attention to the other as having something meaningful and valuable to communicate. In other words, by paying attention, the listener recognizes the other as a valuable interlocutor and a valuable person, of course, as having something to contribute to the conversation. And on the other hand, non-listening or inadequate listening may be very demeaning and have a tremendous impact on self-esteem. So listening in that sense is a form of recognition. Listening as a practice of recognition opens a space for the other to be, herself or himself, in dialogue, to feel welcome and part of a dialogue. So listening, in a way, here is a form of hospitality, it's recognition as hospitality, creating a space to do something together. On the other hand, if people do not listen to you, you'll feel excluded from conversation, and then there's no space to go on with that discussion that hasn't really begun. Listening as a practice of recognition makes possible cooperation. According to Richard Sennett, cooperation may be defined as an exchange in which the participant benefits from the encounter. I would add they all benefit from that encounter, and it is because they all bring something to the table. So there's no dialogue with only one person. So we all bring something. So by listening to the other, I invite the other to do the same when I will speak. And I invite the other to be a partner in conversation, to exchange and benefit from the conversation and from all the other endeavors we may have, starting with that conversation. Listening as a practice of recognition and cooperation, of course, doesn't occur in a vacuum. It's a valuable social good for which we have to fight politically, accepting to listen and refusing to listen may be politically very significant. Let's say that the Printemps Érable protests might have been interpreted as a demand for listening to the government. And basically, I remember the Minister of Education, Lynn Beauchamp, saying that she was listening to the silent majority, not to the protesters. Not noticing the irony, of course, but listening was a political demand, and it's often a political demand because process of consultation as are very often, there was actually a process of consultation, and that's what the government was saying. But that process of government of consultation was only a process of legitimation, as it is too often. So listening is here as important as speaking. You may speak, but if nobody listens, there's nothing. So listening constitutes relationships in a way, and I think it gives a focus, an important focus, a different focus on political action, and that focus will be part of my research in the upcoming years. Notably, I want to look at listening in more in semi and more formal institutional settings. So that will be part of my research. I will have more case studies as well, and listening in universities as well will be part of my research. Thank you.